What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Jax Jones and Martin Warner Show. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope you guys are loving it so far. It means a lot. Obviously, one of the reasons why we do this show is just we really enjoy chatting about different topics, life, business, and art. And, you know, in a bromance way, we find each other thoroughly interesting. Do you think that's vain? Do you think that's vain, bro?
No, I think it's honest.
It's pretty narcissistic. We're like, do you know what? We find each other so interesting. We want everyone to listen in on it.
I think everyone's busy and everyone gets to choose how they spend their time. And if they care about their life, they only spend their time with purpose, right? and what, we wouldn't do it, right, if we didn't love what we do and we didn't love our conversation.
True. I mean, I'm pretty depressed right now because I've tested positive for coronavirus. And just to let everyone know, I am alone. We're recording this separately. But, you know, I need cheering up. And it's worse because I'm just hearing my daughter playing outside. I'm like been basically dungeoned in a room in my house. And I could just hear my daughter playing outside. It's actually killing me. I'm just like, oh my God. She's like learning all this new stuff and I just can't even be a part of it. I didn't realize how much I just love being a dad. It's like, yeah. I think I love it more than making music, man.
Oh, I wholehearted agree with you. You know, 15 kids later, I just love it.
You got some powerful sperms.
No, 3 kids later.
Do you know what the world record, I think something like for the most amount of kids is like 150 kids or something like that.
Yeah, I mean.
Am I just talking shit? Hold on.
Listen, you might be talking shit, but I got to tell you, who the hell cares? That's ridiculous, right? That's just insane.
Sitting up, dude, I doubled it. It's 69 children. This guy, Fedor Vasilyev, had 69 kids with his wife, Valentina Vasilyev, across 27 births between 1725 and 1765.
I think there's something in that number that could have prevented that happening. I really do.
Maybe. But I mean, it just got me thinking, man, like, I don't know. I would say, although I've said I was depressed right now, I'm kind of at a place where I'm thinking more about how I use my time, especially now, like where I know everyone had this effect where the pandemic's kind of made everyone slow down and people are evaluating what they do. And then now they've come out of the pandemic, people are rushing to go out and then feeling this kind of overwhelm. And I just feel like I'm questioning what I actually want to do with my time. And like one of the reasons I wanted to become successful is because you could control time. But now I feel conflicted between the pressure of chasing a career and actually sometimes I just want to hang out all day and do swings with my kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's tricky, man. You ever felt like that?
Yeah, I have. But I think everyone has. And I think that if we talk about, you know, this subject of finding purpose and or understanding how do you get on a track that makes you happy, that fulfills all the things that you're going through, is kind of an adaptable platform that you can say, look, I'm doing 5 things, but as I get older, they may adapt. And you use these skills to almost like a health check to evaluate in your purpose in life, right? I think that whatever words or taxonomy you put around it, everyone's going through the same thing. Some people say it's about balancing life, balancing priorities, which you might say is balancing activities or balancing focus areas. They all come back to this thing, and that's there's 24 hours in the clock that we use, and that's it. And you've got one life to lead, and you've got to decide, you know, what are your goals? How do you spend your time? What's important to you? And that changes all the time. So it's not a question of, in my opinion, I'll talk about mine in a minute, but when I hear you say that, I think I empathize, and I also say it's an opportunity. Maybe I'm a half glass full guy, right? And I am for sure. It's not that you have to worry about spending or say, is this right that I feel guilty that I want to spend time on the swings with my kid versus making money or making music or whatever? It's a question of what's important to you right now. What do you think is going to bring you long-term happiness? And what's the plan to do this? So how do you get to do a piece of it all? Because no one has everything. And then how do you let go of this idea of feeling deficient because you don't get everything you want?
Oh my God, that gets me all the time.
Yeah, it's like, of course.
Pressure to feel productive all the time, or like pressure to feel like you're being effective
right, right.
all the time.
But
I mean, I feel like a lot of people can relate, like especially now in my 30s, I'm in my 30s now, and you see the people that kind of got it together and you see the people, some people are struggling to kind of figure it out. And I mean, do you feel like a lot of people have lost their purpose today, or it's harder because we're just influenced by so many things? There's a lot of fucking advice
I think,
all the time.
Yeah, I think that the average person doesn't want to triangulate life, right? They don't want to over-evaluate it. But unfortunately, life's full of ups and downs. There are some things you can control and some things you can't. And no matter how much you try to take risk out of the equation, you're going to be unhappy. There's going to be hardship. There are going to be health issues, and there are going to be changes that affect your emotions, right? Which may give you these big dopamine kicks and then bring you back down, you know. And over, you know, I guess a nod to our podcast with Anna, but my point is, in that balancing act, you desire things, you're adding complexity, you're experimenting, things don't always work out. You're working with other humans, normally our family, and they have opinions and thoughts and feelings. This is, you know, the trick of life is a constant experiment. Like, so you have to be able to say, how do you get above all that and have some world view or macro view of your life to say, it's okay that I'm going to find contentment because I believe in what I do. That's one thing. This is, by the way, how I deal Ooh. With it, right? The second thing is, can I articulate that belief into a set of purposes with clear actions where I can say, I get up in the morning and I do this and it makes me happy. Or I believe I can get some positive, or what I call incremental progress, so I can say, you know what? I didn't have a dud day, right? Now, this requires organization. And then I say to myself, if I can't do it all, people think because you make a lot of money, and you own a lot of things, or you appear to be more successful than the average person, that all of a sudden you've got happiness. And it's just not true.
People mistake that all the time, right, man. And I think money just makes things a bit more, I don't know.
Well,
there's a word that I read. It makes things comfortably unhappy.
Well, I don't want to digress from this one particular point, but I would say that you can give me any social demographic and I'll tell you why they're not happy necessarily. And I'll take one obvious one. The more money you have, let's take billionaires, they suffer with isolation. They suffer with massive isolation because they can't relate to other people's lives. And they can't relate to them because the requests of helping them out, the requests for money, their ability to say, I don't live the life you live. And they're too busy protecting their downside risk. What if I put myself out there? So there are challenges. If you look at Elon Musk and, you know, the world's richest man right now, this guy's got all these kids. He travels around. He works really hard. He is doing amazing things in the world, but he's got an enormous complexity challenge. And money can't solve that challenge. That's why apparently he lives in a box, works incredible, crazy hours. And I bet he looks at the same thing as me in some same similar way. What is the progress I made each day? Right, what am I progressing towards, a goal that is going to make me fulfilled? If I can't progress, everything else I say to myself, A, it's not perfect, and B, I'm willing to sacrifice. Because sacrifice means that you truly understand where you're deficient and where you can let go. And that is, for me, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's almost tranquilizing, in as much that I can literally strip this stress that I have when I don't get everything that I want, because life doesn't give me. I have sickness in the family. I can't click my fingers and change that. But what I can do is adjust my purpose in life. Maybe to spend more time with the family, maybe to help out more. Whatever my purpose is, I take it through a method that just
it
allows
sounds like
me
the purpose
to
do it. Is fluid.
I think I don't know about in your whole lifetime, it's definitely fluid, right?
Yeah.
If you've got it really, if you are some incredible person that is fulfilled by very little that changes, then you would say it's fairly static for large parts of your life. But I would bet that you live your life like everyone else in chapters. And the more I talk to people, the more I just, in terms of my own sanity, is realize that everyone is living a set of chapters. Yours might be 30, another one's might be 100. But you, so that's you're adapting your purpose to that.
Do you reckon it's funny that you brought up billionaires and stuff? I remember reading that there's an economy of scale of happiness in terms of accumulation of wealth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
and I've experienced this anecdotally, you get to your first, I think it's around 75 grand, you get your a big kick of, wow, I'm making my first 75 grand. And I think the next one is something like 100 grand. Then it goes your first million. Then it's 5 million. And then after that, you have to add more millions to get the same kick. But obviously it's harder. We've discussed this, to double your net worth. And I remember, dude, when I made, the first time I had 40 grand in my account, I was taking fucking screenshots. I was fucking sending it to my mates. I was like, fuck. Do you know what I mean? And it just goes to show that money, for me anyway, doesn't give me, it isn't my highest purpose at various points. I think at that time it was. Do you think there's a wealth sweet spot?
Mm-hmm, that's a good question. Well, like you, I've gone through massive transformations in my life in terms of my career and wealth and trying to figure out, you know, just because you have it, do you go and spend it? If you go and spend it, do you add complexity? If you add complexity, are you actually content?
What do you mean by complexity?
You can desire too much. So living in different, so as you know, you know, or as a lot of people found out, you know, I live in a few places, and just you try living two lives in two countries, two full lives. First of all,
so that's complexity.
That's complexity, yeah. Right? And you can get, you think you're getting good at it, but you get good at it by just spending a lot more money at it, right? That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that you do it and you say to yourself, wow, I just love the fact that I see, you know, five different sets of flowers in my garden, in different gardens, but actually I don't spend any time smelling them. So
then would you say you're out of balance?
Well, what I'd say is that if we are moving to a world where we have the attention and sorry fish, but the attention for as a goldfish, right, where we're happy in this social media world to take snaps of things and get some kind of immediate gratification, but we don't want some sustained meditative satisfaction. So I would argue, if I had one garden and had all these hydrangeas and the wind was blowing and I was listening to the waterfall and I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, I'm in paradise, right? Jump in the pool and I'm thinking, who the hell's got this, right? And many people have, right? But you sit there and you think to yourself, this is a great life. And then I get up and I go for a walk, you know, I eat with the family and that's it. I might watch a movie. I read a book at night and I think to myself, actually, this is my veranda. This is my end life. I don't think I'm adding much more to it. I might change the book I'm reading. I might swim at a different time, right? But I might see my grandchildren, don't have any at the moment, but that's it. Then you get the life of, well, actually, I love that. Take a photo of it. I love it. I might show it to someone, say, yeah, I don't talk about my life much, but I've got this great waterfall. And you know, four or five times a year I see it and I swim only twice. But by the way, I've got another pool somewhere else and I live in this area and I do this. And all of a sudden I think to myself, I can't even tell my story to anyone. First of all, people don't relate. And secondly, they're like, is that really enjoyable? Because the truth is, I'm not smelling the flowers. I'm not enjoying it that much. So I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way. I think it's different for everyone. And I'm not sure there's a real sweet spot. I think it comes back to, and I think we're going to talk about it more, and that's, how do you drive a purpose life? Or how do you, what is a purpose-driven life for someone? And if you can actually reach that level of contentment and purpose, then I think money is not the factor. Money is an enabler, right? It washes the process, right? It says, okay, do you need to shine this up a bit more, get better things? Do you need a slightly bigger house? Do you need a little more activity in your life? But it's not surprising that you can be born into a matriarchal tribe, right? In the Indian Ocean or the Atlantic or the Pacific, and they need very little to be content because they were born with a construct before they even knew it of how their life was going to be run. And it was terribly simplistic, but it was fulfilling. We've got so much opportunity in front of us. You know, prosperity is up, unemployment is down. If you look at, you know, the stock market,
but
is
with
up
that,
200%.
It's more, it's too much stuff. It's almost like, because where 30 years ago, you say they encourage you to smell the roses and just build a life for yourself. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And whereas now it's like, you, as you say, you've got all this choice and you see, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people now where they're like quitting their jobs because they don't have purpose in their job, or, you know, they're just trying to like, and they don't know how to figure out what to do next. Let's get into it, man. Like, how would you balance it?
You have to decide whether you want to analyze it. You ask the question that people feel misguided. That was your statement. You said, people, what do you think is going to happen after the pandemic? Will people, you know, question their purpose in life? Are people going, you might argue, does this lead to mental health? Is it going to lead to further unemployment? Fuck, what happens if we get another pandemic, right? The truth is,
I'm not going that far.
No, and let's hope not. But I think there's two things. Everyone must demand of themselves the right to analyze what their purpose in life is. Otherwise, it's going to be a very limiting life. Because if you think you can stumble through it without any foresight, I think that's dangerous. You don't walk with your eyes shut, right? You might get run over. You've got to do some thinking. I do argue that to do it constantly is hard. And it gets into the second thing. You have to commit. Find your passions. Find the things that you believe in. The belief is this thing that sits above the description, which is the purpose. And if you believe, when you don't want to get up and, let's say, manage your health, you know, I'm trying to quit cigars. No one's got a perfect life. I've got a lot of willpower and I haven't been able to crack that.
But willpower isn't enough, man.
No. So believe. So there's other things.
That's where the purpose comes. Like, because you could, it already runs out. It's not an infinite resource.
But I think, though, that if you are willing to re-examine your purpose in life and find ways to make it hygienic, you know, this gets into motivation or the rest of it, but look at ways to say, look, how do I make my mindset clearer? How do I remove some of this complexity and stuff? Then you've got a chance of adapting through this life. So everyone can get through a bad situation like the pandemic. Everyone can, by examining their purpose of life, in my humble opinion.
I think, I mean, staying on the money thing, let's say you focus all your life on a certain thing, or you've built up to a certain point in your life, and you get to this point where you're trying to figure out what to do. Let's run through it. How would you stack it? Because you were talking to me the other day about Maslow's theory, and it kind of blew my mind. I enjoyed it. Can you break it down?
So Maslow's theory is a theory of motivation, right? So it talks about a pyramid. And there's different summarizations of this pyramid. And as you know, I love a pyramid. I just love a pyramid as a way.
I think pyramids come out every time we talk.
Yeah, I could even go into the bathroom. I could put it into a pyramid for you, right? I just pyramids that just fascinate me in terms of scarcity, priority.
You got the wrong
inclination.
Tattoo.
Yeah, I have. But what I said to you is, Maslow figured out these different needs between things that are what they call deficiency factors in being able to motivate and find fulfillment, as they go into growth factors, as you get higher to this thing called realization or actualization, or in some of the pyramids, it's called transcendence. Come up with this bloody thing in the 40s, right? And it became this really hit thing for management scholars.
It cracks me up that he goes, Maslow's, what is it, theory of actualization. It's like, why couldn't he just say Maslow's theory of what makes you feel good?
No, that's it. You'd like that because
if you follow this pyramid,
it feels like it needs a smiley face, and it could be one of your songs, right? If it what it makes you feel good, right? You'll make a song about it or something. No, but so
this is my, I love to do this. I love all the scholars are listening to this like, oh my God, he's so simplistic.
No, he's ridiculing us.
Yeah. Big up Maslow, innit? He taught me how to be happy.
But Maslow's thing became something that everyone studied, particularly if they were doing any form of management course. If they were doing personal development, you would have seen it. And if it used to be the go-to thing for large corporations, if you went on an internal management course, out came Abraham Maslow's your hierarchy.
I think it's actually sick though, because when you were explaining it to me, which I hope you do for the squad listening, everyone, as you're listening to this, just listen to it and try and feel the weight of each part of the pyramid, and you kind of sense where you're out of whack. Do you know what I mean? Like, start from the bottom. What's at the bottom of Maslow's pyramid for self-actualization? No, what do you call it? Motivation of human need.
So yeah, it's a pyramid. The highest level is this thing called transcendence. If you look in simplified pyramids, it will say self-realization or self-actualization. And I'm going to kind of break that down for you. So he argues in this beautiful, think of the pyramids of Gizeh. Think of it, just a very wide pyramid, right? He argues that as you start out in life, you can't grow your life because you're inequipped. Right? You don't have all the tools in order to go about scale or growth. You don't. You can't meet the promised land. You can't have this philosophical debate of, oh my, the thing I want to do is this, because you're concerned with more primitive factors like survival. So if you look in a simplified pyramid, it says survival needs, safety needs, okay? So the first one is physiological needs. And physiological is at the primitive level. Are you healthy, right? Mm. Right? Are you eating, right? Mm. Do you have some family structure, right? Can you survive, okay? That's the first one. And he argues that until you can get that level, you're deficient in life. You won't be able to begin to think about growth until that's there.
That's a big facts right there.
One case example which would be helpful is to say, think about the inequality in life. Think about what politicians are trying to do between trying to bridge that inequality. If there's inequality, a lot of people that are born with less opportunity, have no money, have no family unit at home, maybe single parent, right? Born into a bad neighborhood. Think about how they get past the physiological needs.
Next level.
Safety needs. So once you are alive and ticking and things are going right and you think you've got a bit of sustainability, he focuses on this idea that you're still deficient unless you can make safe what you've got. So
what do you mean by safe?
Safe. So everything in terms of financial, economic, your life,
so you've
at
got some
home,
savings,
your peer, not just money, your peer group. Oh. It's your, okay. Is your life safe? So in other words, so this is all about risk management. This is about saying to yourself, and I'm not talking about, is your wife going to take all your money in a divorce? it talks about the fact that, you know, you're healthy right now, but is the trajectory you're on likely to maintain a good sustainable level of safety? So are you going to lose your money? Are you going to destroy your home? Right? Have you decided you're going to go and rob a bank? Right? Are you ultimately safe? Is your environment going to allow you to be safe? And again, he argues this great case that there are plenty of good examples where peer groups, where people have a job, they lose their job, and they decide to go to a life of crime. Right? And that would be an example where you put yourself into an unsafe situation because the foundation wasn't there. And you are deficient in life if you can't safeguard your assets and your actual life, right? And so that's another deficiency need.
So that's level two.
Yeah, that's level two. So the third one is self-belonging and love needs or belonging and love needs, right? And the idea is...
So what, being in a relationship?
So do you belong to something that you can subscribe to? So this could be just your parents. This could be a girlfriend, a fiance, a wife. It could be children. That you know, you've identified a family unit. You have a family unit. You belong to that family.
Could it be a society? Could it be like you love CrossFit?
It goes right that, well, people, a great example, I don't know about CrossFit or Peloton.
Feels a bit like a family to me.
Yeah, you know, get on the old bike and see how far you can run and then get off and have a virtual beer with them or whatever.
Or is it like being in the army? Like you feel like you're part of something?
A great example is religion.
Got it.
Right? So if you can give, and I've thought about this a lot over the years, as I kind of think about faith, and I think to myself, you know, it must be freeing to be able to give yourself over to a higher power, right? To say, I don't have to worry about feeling ill, getting a sickness, because I'm going to be okay because I'm living the best version of myself. So that self-belonging.
My granddad used to say that all the time. He was a Buddhist. He passed away sadly. But when I was growing up, I was a staunch Christian. And he would often say, I'm jealous of your religion because you have a God to rely on. Whereas in Buddhism, it was more of a teaching and a way of life. And it's that handing over. There is a release in that. But sometimes I miss it because I'm more of an atheist now. But having that belonging to something, and now I experience it with my family, I know what you mean. But that's level three.
That's
so
level,
belonging
that's level
to something.
Three. Yeah, and love, generally, when they say love needs, there are ways to interpret this as there's reciprocal love. And that's already a dangerous term because it's so broad, right? But what I think the way he intended it in the beginning is to say you have to belong to something, and you have to exert and experience love in the process, and that's fantastic because what he's saying is the human soul requires love, right? And it requires you to identify with something, and think about there's good and evil, right? Think about the evil subscription of that, right? People fall into gangs. They fall into groups of people that are driven by a common cause. That is a strong self-belonging. And but what is argued is that if there's not love, then it can't be pure, that you can't bring that back to yourself in order to develop. You've now devoted the vessel of yourself to something greater. So the love is very important, that's reciprocal inside belonging to something. So with that, so if you're not that, you're deficient still.
It's brutal, man. Anyone listening that's deficient, if you've just broken up with someone, it's okay.
Go find someone else, right, to help you out of it.
Jump on the app tonight to fulfill your deficiency needs. Tinder and other apps are available.
But, you know, keep in mind, a strong family, a strong peer group, like our relationship, right, is very, very strong, right? So friends can be part of that belonging to something, right? If that unit is really strong, it's, you know, it can be transcending, which he ultimately gets to. The fourth one, and we're going to get into growth needs in his pyramid, is self-esteem or esteem needs. Okay, and this is really very interesting. It's, so now you've got past your physiological needs, you've got past your safety needs, you now belong to something. It almost feels mechanical, right? It's like check, 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 check. Oh, I've got everything I need. How's your ego? How is that? Is your mind prepared, ready to embrace growth? Are you strong enough to interpret yourself in order to look at things that now aren't physical? They're not tangible, right? They're all up here. So
what do you mean, hold on. What
so
do you
the
mean?
next four areas, this gateway from deficiency needs to growth needs, become all about the mind than they are about tangible factors. Like, I've got a roof over my head, I eat bread and water, right? I've got physical friends, I belong to a family. These are all things that you can physically represent. So that's what I mean by it's not really mechanical, but you get the point that
you're bringing it's tangible. You can't touch it.
No, you're homogenizing these factors that makes you more of a rounded individual. And the fourth stage discusses this idea of esteem needs. What will make you feel like you can increase your self-esteem? And and this comes back to really an examination of, does this makeup work? So have you got the life that you want? So and you haven't got to worry about the future of that life, but it's what soothes your ego, what makes you feel happy, right? Have you got, you know, a balance in that arrangement, right? So are you likely to fall down because your esteem is low, because it looks like you've got everything? A great example, because I always give an example per stage, because I think it helps, is you go to work. And this is what Frederick Hertzberg, right, another motivation model, another management scholar view, he talks about two-factor motivation. It's very simple. If you go to work and you have a good salary, you work with a team that looks okay, but you go in the bathrooms and they stink, right? And let's just say someone's pissing on the floor, right? Yeah. And you go to the kitchen and people are just arguing. And then there's people doing weed, but you know you don't mind it, but you don't, not part of that. What I'm trying to say is the culture looks like it stinks a bit, but you're being paid good money. And don't you hear these people that say, I don't like my job, I don't like the environment, I don't like what's going on, but you know, I have to do it because I need the money, right? So your esteem goes down. And ultimately in that situation, someone leaves the job, even if they're being paid a lot of money.
But it's not just it's just not linked to a job, right? So you're talking generally about your self-esteem.
Yeah, I'm abstract. That's an abstraction layer.
Like your ego.
Correct. It's centered around you, not your job. I'm just giving one example. If you fail on your job, and I'm trying to give you a reason where it looks on the surface like for instance, if you lost your job or didn't earn enough money, it would probably be a safety need that was lower in the pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. But it could well be that it's not, because you're being paid a lot of money. But if you then ultimately are not happy because of those, I've gave you some extreme factors like the culture or the environment is just crap, right? And this is an example that Hertzberg uses. Then your self-esteem's gone down and it could break your pyramid. You could tumble further. This is why people tumble right to the bottom. It's so tragic.
So you've got to work on your self-esteem.
You don't get to hang at the third, fourth or fifth level and stay there. It is possible to fall down. And that's what you're trying to prevent, okay? So it's a ladder. One wrong footing, you might drop a few rungs. You won't fall off it, but because you can't really get to nothing. Ground zero isn't the pyramid, right? So you will get somewhere, but hopefully you're not falling too far. So anyway, so physiological needs, safety needs, belonging and love needs, and esteem needs are the, what they call the first four layers mm-hmm. of this you know, motivation model. It's not that conceptually easy, in my opinion, to it, but I'll just mention them.
I think it is, mate. I'll give you the 30-second snack, bruv. Do you know what I mean? First one, physiological needs. You've got a roof over your head. You've got running water. You know, you've got food. Second one, safety needs. It's the mortgage paid. You're getting kicked out. Is your job secure? Third one, have you got reciprocal love? Some sort of family structure? Some sort of perhaps a girlfriend that or boyfriend that really loves you? Do you know what I mean? Basically, a unit. Now that's your kind of basic stuff. Then the next part of the pyramid is we're going into growth, things that push you forward. And that starts with self-esteem. And is your ego satisfied? Do you feel like you're doing something of importance? Is that how you'd frame it?
The top part of the pyramid, I think, is the cool part, but it's a bit fluffier, in my opinion. The first level is cognitive needs. And cognitive needs are all about saying, how do you feed your brain? So how do you develop? How do you develop more mental strength? Stuff like that, right? How do you make sure that you are dealing with your own contentment? An example would be looking at happiness or what they call happiness syndrome, right? So what is happiness and are you experiencing it and how frequently are you experiencing it? And in that example, it starts to make you list everything you hate in life and everything you love. And then you realize you can't have either. You've got to have both. And this reminds me of the dopamine issue, right? Of you've got to do hard and challenging things to bring yourself back to balance, right? Back to level. And so mental health comes back to how do you continue to feed your brain with mentally strong things? How do you tax your brain and make it healthy? How do you examine your life, right?
So you got to be, all right, cool. So what? That's above self-esteem?
Correct. That's the fifth level. And this is the
fifth
first
level.
So this is the growth needs. And this is about how do you mentally... make yourself stronger, right? In terms of giving yourself a cognitive need, okay, or needs.
All right.
So the sixth one is aesthetic needs. So this is one where everyone thinks they jump to, right? So if you're in like Mayfair or whatever, you know, the guys want to make a bit of money and prove themselves to everyone, and you know the women want to find a great life, and some of them do it on their own, and some of them do it in this idea of a power couple, right? But they judge everything. Both men and women in this level look at materiality, and they think it makes them happy. You know, a Ferrari or something stupid, right? A Gucci bag, right? A nice house. Oh, dare I say, I got a house in the south of France, right? I've got a beach house or whatever, right? And aesthetic needs are important. With you, you like a little bit, but not much. You got a watch on, you know.
What do you mean, delusions of grandeur? I call it.
No, well, I think that's the extreme of it, right? That's the extreme of it. But you definitely don't have that. You have nothing like that. But what I'm saying is, there's a certain aesthetic thing that you would say for your job. And who you are as a person and the authenticity of you is there's an aesthetic quality to what you bring to your life, right?
So you mean looking good, yeah?
Not just looking good, the what you have in life, what you everything. So the perception.
So people
of,
spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, like
they
building
spend a lot
your
of time
career
in that part of the pyramid.
In my portfolio, I've got crypto. Oh, I'm such a dog. You know, it's oh great. You know, I got Shiba. You know, whatever.
Literally,
right?
My mate's telling me about how much money he's made in Shiba Inu right now. Don't know how to feel.
I know you're going to tell me some crazy multiple and we're all going to get upset. I mean
you talk about your multiples with
I do,
you know, 50 million in 18 months. This guy's shitting on your multiple right now.
Yeah.
All we need is Elon to tweet another Shibu and he makes your multiple looking
he
like
could,
a...
He could boost, but there's no evidence. This is why not to digress, but Elon walked back his comments that this market is very risky and that it can't on its own sustain itself. He goes, it's only a punt. That was his first thing. Second thing is everything that he's talked up has gone back down.
Yeah, true.
These are facts. Third one is people have lost more money than they've gained in crypto. Everyone looks at the crypto billionaires and thinks, hey, that's me. No. Right? No. You know, it's not. The majority of people are going to lose in the short term. However, I have taken a position. I've taken more than one position. But here's the thing. If I lost it, my life will move on. So the difference between our investments, like what we do in our life, is that we don't want to make big bets that we lose. We want to have much more calculation around, you know, at least having a good downside protection model. What is the downside in crypto? Fuck all.
We'll do our chat, because you've given me some amazing chat over the years about building your financial model. But another fucking pyramid on aesthetic needs. So what's above aesthetic needs?
And by the way, the reason he thinks they're important is that there's aesthetic needs are about perception. And remember, you hear this word, 9/10 of reality is perception. Right.
Yeah.
So aesthetic needs are not just how they make you feel. It's like, oh, I can do my job because I look like this. You can write music because you look like this, because you've got a great watch and whatever. Or you just feel dope, right? Think of this in any part of your life. That's why. So it's not just you bought it and feel good about shopper's theory, right? Like shopaholic, right? That's one thing. And that might give you an immediate kick, but it's the fact that you own something and it makes you feel like you've attained something. That's motivation. Right. That, and remember, this is all motivation, right? So the third one, which is the seventh, is called self-actualization, sometimes called self-realization.
And what does that mean?
So this one gets everyone. This is in some simplified Maslow's hierarchy of needs, is that this is at the top, right? But what it means is have you realized the potential of your talent, of your life? Of meeting
people
your
struggle with that, man. You know, you see the people going, do you know what? I've always loved baking. I'm going to be a baker.
Yeah.
That's a hard one. Like, what happens if you've got loads of talent? How do you,
well, so
you know,
the question is it on your purpose? Is it on your purpose graph? Right. So did you just stumble into something and fall in love? And if you did, that's great. But normally,
not everyone's so lucky.
No, by the way, that's just a needle in a haystack. And by the way, I'm not sure that that is sustainable, because the average person lives their life in chapters, has got to grow, and will experience lots and lots of up and down. Right. So so I don't know if that's possible. What's more likely is you pick something, you devote yourself to it, you work hard, and you at some point achieve something. And as a result of that, mentally inside yourself, you attain something in life because you've worked hard for it, and there's something great about that. In your world, it's music, right? You're DJ, you write music, you produce music, you put out records, if you have fun along the way, you're also developing a family, and all this works out, and you're able to lift yourself because your financial means, you would argue that you've realized your talent. Right, you've realized your talent, you've done something, and it can mean a lot of things. It's not just talent. Right. It's have you realized your beliefs? Have you got from one place to another? Have you changed your whole structure of your life? Like, let's say I wanted, I use a really bad example here, a refugee that wants to leave an area, they've got to leave their whole life behind. Mm-hmm. So they've got to build their whole structure. Mm-hmm. That would be realizing their talent, right? They've been able to fulfill their life by starting over again, right? That's self-actualization.
It's kind of like when we spoke about post-pandemic thriving, and actually having people that are experiencing some sort of hardship, they thrive even more afterwards because of the like using their talents to push themselves further than they might have done before because of that pressure.
You've got it. So that's self-actualization, and by the way, that is the manifestation of achievement, of you saying, I can look at something and I can measure it. I can say I've done something. It's all kind of come together for me now, right? Mm-hmm. And normally it stops there, but there is another one called transcendence. It's right at the top, right at the spear of it, right? And transcendence is, what's the best way for me to put it? It's like the very highest, like most inclusive way of thinking about your conscious behavior or your conscious needs, so human consciousness. And what this is trying to say is, and I don't think he touches his readings, and I've read so much on this subject over the years, but it's almost spiritual, but he doesn't think of it in a spiritual path. Like, he doesn't define it that way, but it's, can you live above your measurement? Like, I achieved X, therefore my talents work, right? Oh, everything must have come together because my purpose in life, I'm living the dream, right? That would be, I'm aware of it. But being able to say, I am so conscious of what I've done that I can live above it, I can have an out-of-body experience of
what?
I achieved this, and so therefore I know what the good and the bad of achieving that is, and it's so internal to me that I believe I've transcended to a different area. And his view is not to get spiritual, not to get religious.
But that sounds like understanding of self. Like if you understand why you did all these things, then you get above
it. So that's it. Can you transcend to something greater than what your story is telling you? Can you look inside yourself and say, oh my God, I am conscious of everything I've achieved, and therefore I'm happy to even walk away from that because I completely understand it, or I'm able to pick at what was good and what was bad, and I have got the greatest meaning I've achieved the greatest meaning of what I've done. That's transcendence.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you, there's a lot to digest there. I would say that the reason why I'm experiencing a certain level of happiness now, and I would say I'm the most rounded in my human experience right now, is because I'm quite pleasantly dispersed on all sectors of that pyramid. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm healthy, got the corona, but I'm so far doing okay in it. I'm double vax people. I am a pro vaxxer, by the way. I've been having this fight, but you got I've got my health needs. I'm safe. I've got things are stable. I've got a family. I'm experiencing real love for the first time with my daughter. Like it's a true love. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah, pure. Yeah. Then and you and I are both big advocates for self-reflection. So we spend a lot of time in growth as well, and thinking about where we are, and my career's at a certain place. It's stable. I'm not going for like Jeff Bezos level ambition right now. Like I'm enjoying living in the reciprocal love part.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? And I've got some form of actualization. I've got self-esteem now. I feel happy, bro. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you're checking it for yourself, do you know what I mean? How do you keep a check on where you're at?
I knew you'd get there because that is the natural question. And I'd say for anyone listening that when I think of my life, and I'm older than you, right? So I've traveled a little more in terms of my journey, and therefore I'm likely to have done a number of things that went well and have made more mistakes, right? Because you're living life longer and inevitably nothing's perfect. But if I was to look at your life, I'd say that you think you struggle with balance, but your groundedness in your family unit and your ability to be this global star is rare, right? Mm. Because they pull at each other, right? And so, you know, I'm gonna call it breaking news here, right? So I'll tell you,
right.
It links not only to the idea of someone who can have parts of everything, and I use you as an example, and me loosely as everyone's an example, fits into this, but also it fits into this idea that measurement is critical. And many people, scholars over the years, have taken this triangle and tried to say, what is a good way to say, well, now you tell me, great. But now tell me how you can actually physically, like how do we build units of measurement, and how do we build a methodology behind it? And you know, outside a pyramid, the other thing I love is a methodology. I love a methodology. I mean, I'm obsessed with that as I am more pyramids. And you know, I would honestly say if the three things I love in life, it's probably pyramids, methodology, and sex. And
why don't you ask our guests for methodologies more often? You say, so, you know, when we have guests on, what's your methodology for why didn't you ask Anna Lebke, what's your methodology for maintaining your dopamine? Why don't you frame it like that?
We have talked on a few of them about their approaches and methods, because method is a word that scares people because they think they've got to put a label on it and formalize it.
Oh, yeah,
so I never talk about that.
It's useful, though.
I always say, what's your approach? Because that's a softer way of saying how do you. And the other thing is that they rush through because they're experts. They're well tested on what they think they have to say. So unless they, so guess what? They're telling you up front. Look, we talk about this all the time, Mr. Shishu. There's four things. And then you're all saying, you're like, what the fuck? Let me tell you, I want to learn what the approach is or test you. So that's probably why it doesn't. But we can pick apart it more. But that's, I think, the reason. So let me just quickly say this to you about the units of measurement. So let me break this into you the way I do it, right? And this to me is key. I see Maslow's hierarchy. After I got completely frustrated with really trying to say what are all of the drivers in each layer, all of the drivers. So I'll give you an example. There are over 20, right, in cognitive needs, right, as an example. And there's less in esteem, like 10 or 11, if I remember rightly. But I'm like, it got crazy. And then I'm thinking, if you break this down to such a binary level, you can't microscopically measure your life like that.
So no, you can't.
I'm going back to like you always explore the width and the depth of what you can do, right? So I thought that ain't gonna work. So I thought to myself, I love art. How do I think of art in this? And I like to cross over functions. And I thought, I'll look at this as a canvas. And I'll say to myself, at any one time, the reason it's difficult to say, have I fulfilled 100% each level? And does that give me the reason to get to the next level? No. I believe it's the opposite. So I've told you a pyramid, but I believe I'm a painter, and I'm painting at different levels a slice of what I've got. So forget the specific units, but it may be that I paint 50 to 60 to 70% of the esteem needs, but I've got 100% physiological needs, as an example, right? Mm. And so what you can do is you can give yourself credit like a canvas, if you think of it as a painting, where you are painting your achievement at every level throughout your life, and you slowly will complete that pyramid.
Fill it up.
Yeah, you will fill it. But you won't necessarily do it 100% gateway, next level. Have I achieved 100%? No. Next level.
But life ain't like that. It moves around.
Some of each, right? You have a self-esteem. Of course you do. Right?
No, but you can, I think what's useful about the pyramid is some people can focus too much on one thing. And obviously you don't need this if you are feeling like you have got purpose. Perhaps you don't need to. But I think it's useful to be aware of it, because it just kind of explains things for yourself. Do you know what I mean?
If you are feeling
like a bit like meh, just have a look. You might see why you're feeling meh.
Yeah, well, I think it tells you that there's 8 levels of different perspectives of which they are clearly, 6 of them are clear needs. And 2 of them, like realization or actualization, transcendence, are stages that you may get to once you've got all these other in check. And the truth is, Tim's or Jack's or whoever I want to call you, beneath this, you could take the pyramid out completely. You could sit there naked. And the reality is they all exist, right? If you strip it back, they're all in your life. So it's a strong method. It's a great way to look at your life and say, hell, I need to focus on my cognitive needs. I need to focus on my self-esteem. Mm. You know, I need to worry about my safety. You know, these are real areas where it's a great way to examine. If you don't have this in check, you're probably never going to get to that path of feeling content, feeling really, really aware, adding the most back to your life and others. All these things will always dog you if you don't actually get the others, in check.
No, you're right, because it weren't always like that for me. Like, you know, I wouldn't say my family structure, I felt growing up, it was a very turbulent and difficult environment. I didn't start out with money. Do you know what I mean?
It was, right.
When we was young, my mum was borrowing curtains from the local council for us to get into a place. Do you know what I mean? It was, you know, you kind of figure it out. And, you know, I could tell a lot of stories about this kind of stuff. And I think, if you approach it methodically and just fill in each area bit by bit, be patient with yourself, you kind of get to that point where you're just like, yeah, I've gone through each part of the pyramid, so there's a reason why I feel good. And then if I don't, it's because some part of it's missing, and that's all right. You can kind of by being aware of the pyramid, you can work on that bit.
And it isn't, if you're willing to commit a little bit of your time, like a lot of things in life about, you know, development in general, it requires you to feel good about your life. So I'll give you an example. In your physiological needs is your sleep pattern. Ooh. And how many people foul on sleep? Right,
it's the first to go, isn't it?
Yeah. If you're burning a candle at both ends, or you're being dangerous to yourself, well, guess what? you're probably not having the awareness to develop your cognitive needs further because you're not as productive. You're living a substandard life. And so, you know, everyone can evaluate this. It's not a difficult pyramid. I brought one up a little while ago. It's not as detailed. And I look at it and think to myself, anyone can interpret this. You just got to want to. You've got to want to. And it, what it is it's a great guiding light to frame your life. Like if you're looking for help, you can find it in thoughts like this. Mm. So we spent a lot of this podcast talking just about you know, the motivation and theory. How can you improve your life through
health
through
check
Maslow.
On the purpose of your life? Yeah.
but I wonder, you know, this is part of a series, I think, where it's really about the purpose of life and or how do you improve your life. And this to me straddles that. This is a toolkit for the health, you know, health check on your purpose of for life. That's great. It's also serves as a motivational development approach to life, like how you can keep your motivation in check. And it also helps as a tool to kind of figure out how do you really go for growth and purpose long term. So it's not just trying to maintain a purpose. It's giving you tools to actually get beyond it. And so next time we do a show, we should talk about, you know, in this series, we should talk about the wider purpose for life, because there's more tools we could offer that I think are really, really useful. I'll give you a couple of quick examples that are important that we can't get into today, but you have to think, you have to be aware of yourself. This is the awareness bit done, right? If you conquer Maslow, you're aware, right? You're aware of like where you're at and what you're doing. But you're setting goals is important. Right? Goals are terribly important, and understanding how to measure a goal and being honest to yourself. Understanding maybe it's in the fulfillment and belonging, but giving back to people, helping people, helping others is an incredible way to feel, to possess fulfillment. And people believe it goes back to the human soul, and that's there is something about being human that says if we can help people, we get this enormous amount of purpose.
I like that, because it was something that came up the other day with I must have really loved that Anna Lebke conversation where we talk about dopamine, but where she talks about living and doing what you do for someone else just removes that narcissism, and it just makes it way more fulfilling. You saw it with Guy Kawasaki. It's like, what can I do to serve the customer? What can I, you know, that theme just lingers around.
Yeah.
And there's something in it, man.
There's a congruence in all of this. But next conversation, we'll talk about, you know, how do you encourage creativity? How do you get, you know, to use Ray Dalio's, right? How do you become brutally transparent? Which is freedom of speech. But how do you allow, right? This is why we're having a conversation about gender, right? How do you allow people to express themselves? Because now we've not got other tools that are getting in the way that suppress us in any way to find out who we really are as people, right? And the other thing is, what is the purpose and how do you prioritize friends and family? How do they give you the encouragement to do other things? I mentioned helping other, but execution, focusing on one thing at a time. All of these things are part of this toolkit to help you improve your purpose for life. I think at some point we should really, you know, dig into this. What do you think?
Let's tuck in. No, I'm keen, man. But in the meantime, guys, if you want to check back any of the resources that we've discussed on the show today, just head over to jacksandmartinshow.com and it will be all there, plus some more bits. We love doing the show. So thanks for listening, and leave us any comments that you got on the website. Big love.